They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Some exciting new cancer drugs, but you guessed it, at a cost. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Molly Wood, in for David Brancaccio. There is new hope for people suffering from the worst forms of cancer. At a major gathering of oncologists in Chicago this week, drug makers revealed that they might be close to major breakthroughs in both research and treatment. That raises the question, of course, of the price tag on those drugs. Cancer drug costs are up 72% in the last 5 years to $15.9 billion. From the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Dan Gorenstein reports on one effort to make them more affordable.
A company that specializes in buying prescription drugs for large employers and health insurers is cutting new types of deals with pharmaceutical companies.
You have a handful of really innovative, forward-thinking companies willing to say, if my drug doesn't work well, I shouldn't be paid as much.
That's Express Scripts Chief Medical Officer Steve Miller. Express Scripts has contracts with 6 to 10 manufacturers that tie price to a drug's performance. In just the first 10 weeks of the program, doctors are starting to prescribe these drugs over others. University of Chicago economist Rena Conti says she's psyched.
The fact that it's already been taken up by so many manufacturers, but also by so many physicians, tells you the power of this idea.
This approach could slow how much we spend on the newest and most expensive cancer treatments. Until now, the manufacturers had the upper hand when a new drug comes to market. Conti says these value-based deals will force drug makers to prove their products work if they want a premium price. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
We know food waste is a big, expensive deal, but it's hard to know exactly how big a deal globally. Today, a coalition of international organizations is launching the first ever global standard to measure that. Many companies and countries, including the U.S., have set big goals for reducing food waste, but until now, they didn't have common definitions and reporting requirements. Marketplace's Annie Baxter has details.
Worldwide, an estimated one-third of all food is lost. Maybe it rots in farm fields, or it's wasted, often pitched, uneaten by consumers. Robert von Otterdijk is with the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, which helped craft the standard with the goal of eradicating hunger. He says a big achievement of the standard is to define wasted or lost food.
It is still good enough to be used as compost or as animal feed. In some places, people say, well, the food is not wasted because we still make good use of it. But we say, no, it is not available for people to eat anymore.
The standard gets users to do things like report the physical amount of food lost by weight and potentially track it over time. For grocers, that could apply to tossed produce. Sasha Stashwick is with the Natural Resources Defense Council. She says measuring all this stuff is an important first step to fixing the problem, but she notes the standard is voluntary.
So a lot is going to depend on countries actually stepping up and using it.
The World Resources Institute says global food loss and waste cost up to $940 billion a year. I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
Tomorrow, 6 states will hold presidential primary contests, including California, where all 3 remaining candidates have been campaigning there on a solidly anti-trade message. That's even though California probably benefits from trade more than any other state. From KPCC in Los Angeles, Ben Bergman reports.
Here are all 3 candidates campaigning recently in California.
I believe we can still make it in America and export from America.
It is time for them to build those products right here in America.
Other people are taking your jobs and our jobs are being disappearing. They're going to other countries.
Finally, something everyone can agree on. But 40% of U.S. imports come through local ports. So any decline in trade could hurt not just workers on the docks, but also those who transport and store all those shoes and big screen TVs from Asia people order on Amazon. They're known as logistics workers, and they're part of one of the fastest growing fields in California. Unfortunately, the pay often isn't great, certainly not as good as manufacturing. That's why rhetoric like this resonates.
We're going to start making things again. We're going to start up our manufacturing businesses.
Trump has been the most vocal about stopping cheap imports. He's threatened a 35% tax on some goods from Mexico and a 45% one on Chinese products.
If they don't behave, if they don't follow the rules and the regulations so that we can have it equal on both sides, we will tax you.
But China and Mexico would likely retaliate, slapping their own tariffs on goods from the U.S. That would be especially bad for California farmers, since 40% of their produce gets sold overseas, like all the almonds China buys or all the grapes that go to Mexico. Fred Bergston is a trade expert at the Peterson Institute.
Agriculture is always among the most politically sensitive of traded products. So when foreigners retaliated against Trump's import controls here, U.S. agriculture would get hurt.
There are also a lot of California companies that do business with Mexico and China. A trade war would be bad for them. In fact, trade consultant Michael Comunez says some damage could already be done.
There's a number of U.S. companies that have pending deals in Mexico that are increasingly growing concerned about not so much pursuing them, but having any publicity associated with them.
And Comunez worries it will only get worse as we get closer to November. In Los Angeles, I'm Ben Bergman for Marketplace.
Finally, it might be easier to get into Stanford than to get a job at an investment bank. Goldman Sachs says it got 250,000 applications from recent grads this summer. All the major investment banks now say they can only hire between 2 and 3% of applicants. Guess those new workplace perks, Friday nights off at Credit Suisse, are working. In New York, I'm Molly Wood with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.